Now, you were explaining to me exactly what, yes, what technical training involved at Sandhurst.
The conception of infantry tactics in 1914 was very different from that at the beginning of the Second World War. It was really based on the lessons of the Boer War superimposed on the Crimea. The lesson of the Boer War was the immense value of the rifle handled by experts, so that the basic infantry training was to develop a very proficient rifleman with a bolt-operated weapon, which he was trained to fire up to 15 rounds a minute rapid. But we only had two machine guns in a battalion at the beginning of the war, and they were not even taught at Sandhurst. The idea was you built up a firing line by advancing in small rushes of detachments, and then by the volume of your rifle fire, you attempted to overcome the people who were either advancing or who were shooting at you. Looking back, it was a very elementary conception. A certain amount of maneuver was introduced, such as trying to work round flanks and that sort of thing, and all that came into our elementary training. But from the point of view of the cadets at Sandhurst, it was much more teaching you those sort of basic principles and then giving you some experience of night work, moving across country, finding your way, leading small patrols, and that kind of thing.
It sounds from your description that it was based on a concept of fairly mobile warfare.
It was undoubtedly based on a concept that it would be very mobile, and of course, already the war was in operation. The first contact was made at Mons on the 23rd of August, only 9 days after I went to Sandhurst, and at once the British Expeditionary Force was carrying out its rapid withdrawal to the Marne, as the French fell back on the flank, and because no one had anticipated the German thrust through Belgium.
Yes.
So that it was already mobile in France and consequently had its effect on our training in Sandhurst.
Yes. Is there anything else about the technical training at Sandhurst that you recall, apart from these facts you've already mentioned? Any other
We
important
were
aspects of
taught
it?
to build elementary field defences, standard type of trenches, which we actually dug, the initial standard type, which was a 3 foot trench with an 18-inch parapet.
We described this on the first reel, didn't
We've
we?
got that already,
Yeah.
yeah. We spent quite a lot of time on field sketching and reconnaissance, road reconnaissance and that kind of thing, on bicycles and across country, and we actually had to draw sketch maps. Nowadays, of course, you would rely upon maps prepared from photographic reconnaissance and very much more accurate. Indeed, they were very good in France by the end of the war, where they were prepared in that way,
Yes.
and by proper survey. But in the early days, sketch maps were of great value, both in the field and from training point of view, because they taught an eye for country, and we did a lot of it.
Were there any ways which in which you found the tactical training that you got at Sandhurst didn't in fact prove to be very relevant to the kind of war you got involved in on the Western Front? I mean, from your personal experiences and your personal activities.
By the time I personally reached France, it had ceased to be a war of movement. Both sides were virtually getting, if they weren't already, bogged down, which meant that they were constructing stronger and stronger defences, and it became a new conception of war altogether, the static trench warfare type. We were taught to put up barbed wire defences consisting of a sort of double apron, it was called, let's say a thing like a fence to a field with a strands down either side. By 1918, the barbed wire defences, as put up by the Germans, and less so to ourselves, might be as much as 100 yards wide.
So that changed dramatically.
Almost impossible to penetrate if you're under any kind of fire.
Fine. Apart from the actual training, did Sandhurst prepare you from the point of view of morale and professional discipline and pride and those kind of more subjective factors?
Yes, most definitely. And I think still does at Sandhurst today, because although people laugh at the exact drill which, say, is carried out by the guards, and from whom most of the instructors at Sandhurst came, drill instructors, it is absolutely basic to any form of cohesive work which you have to do in later form of training, whether it is a tank crew, or whether it is on a patrol, or whether it is in a trench under intensive bombardment, because the basic element of discipline is if you subordinate your own inclinations to the common denominator.
Can you remember any particular ways in which this kind of discipline was actually inculcated? What sort of methods did they use at Sandhurst to condition you, as you were? Can you remember any of the types of techniques?
Well, it started with this very intensive drill on the square, where you were very quickly raised to a very high standard of drill and efficiency and smartness, comparable, though not quite up to the standard, of the, say, the Brigade of Guards, in a very short time. And anyone who has seen the passing out parade at Sandhurst would bear that out. Because that started at once, this idea in one's mind that one has got to obey instantly any order, if it's a reasonable order.
Was it done in any other way, apart from the very strict discipline on the parade ground?
Oh, of course, by the whole atmosphere, the atmosphere of belonging to not an exclusive club, but a very fine society to belong to. And I think that everyone who went through Sandhurst or came out felt that they had acquired something just from the atmosphere of the place.
Good. That's on. Can you give me any examples of the kind of discipline which characterised Sandhurst?
Well, I think that I might give you a little example. It didn't occur to me, but it's a well-known story, of the relationship between the warrant officer and NCO staff to the cadets, which was basic on teaching young officers their relationship to those under them. The regimental sergeant major at Sandhurst was a great personality and so regarded by all cadets. On one occasion, a cadet omitted to address the regimental sergeant major as sir, as he was expected to do. On the other hand, it was the custom that any warrant officer or NCO speaking to a private use the word sir too.
This would be a cadet private we're talking about.
Talking to a cadet, yes. In those days they were called gentlemen cadets, GCs. A certain regimental sergeant major, speaking to a cadet who had not used the word sir, is said to have rebuked him in this way: "Sir, it's sir to me, and sir to you, sir." What?
When war was declared in August 1914, what were your personal feelings and thoughts about it?
I think, like a very vast majority of youngsters of my age at that time, of excitement and enthusiasm, people went about flying Union Jacks on their bicycles or motor bicycles. Young ladies offered white feathers to people in the street, and there was a general feeling of national enthusiasm which I've never really seen again since, to the same degree. But we none of us thought for a moment that the war would not be over by Christmas. I don't think anyone ever thought in terms of a defeat.
Yes, one thing that I think that it's difficult for someone of my generation to grasp is this feeling of excitement and enthusiasm, because, you know, the kind of war that comes within in our experiences have been wars which have been greeted with horror and apprehension, a very different kind of emotional reaction.
No one had any idea what of the implications of a nation at war. In fact, there's never been such a war, to my knowledge. And the idea that this would be a national war to the extent of the complete mobilization of the country, I don't think occurred to any of us. We thought it would be a quick clash, as in 1870, when the Germans overran France so quickly, and as indeed they did again in 1940. But of course, at that time, I think our excitement really was a feeling of bred a little bit by the tremendous success and expansion of the British Empire, which had just about reached its peak then.
When you actually got to France, did your view about how long the war would last undergo any change?
Oh, I don't think any of us expected then to be over quickly. In fact, none of us really could see how it was going to end, in what way it would end. Because by that time, I didn't get to France till May 1915. The last sort of static, moving movement had taken place up in the East Salient, in which the battalion I belonged to had been involved. And they had just come out absolutely decimated, with only four officers left who had gone over with their battalion to France. They were an Indian battalion from India in December 1914. And those four included the colonel who had been wounded, the second in command who hadn't, and the quartermaster and one other.
Yes. When you got to France in 1915 then, and your expectations that the war would be longer than you originally conceived developed, what kind of things that were going on in France in 15 made you change your mind about this question of the duration of the war?
Its immensity, because there you had two nations or two opposing armies stretching from the North Sea to Switzerland.
When you got to France in 1915, was there anything which surprised you about the responsibilities which you had to take up?
Well, yes, because I joined a battalion which had just been withdrawn from the Second Battle of Ypres and found myself at the age of 18 and 3 months commanding a company as did my fellow subaltern who had joined me from Sandhurst. In fact, at that time, only three officers remained in the battalion, including a commanding officer, who had gone out with it in December 1914. When it was this obvious, appalling wastage which made it quite clear that there was going to be no quick decision.
When you got out of France in 1915, did the war prove to be different in any particular ways from what you had expected it to be?
By the time one went overseas, one had met a lot of people who'd come back from France and had been put through a certain amount of training by them. And so one expected to go into trench warfare, because one knew by then that is what had happened.
Yes.
And my trench warfare really meant static defences. In some cases, there were breastworks that were built up with strong belts of barbed wire and a system of communication and reserve trenches. And the idea simply of the trench system was to hold that particular sector against the day when mobility would be regained somewhere else.
Yes, but even with that advanced knowledge you would get from people who came back to England before you went out, obviously you can never really appreciate what something is going to be like entirely from someone else's experiences. You've got to have your own experience to become really confronted